Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. This week, Ann Patchett's latest novel, The Dutch House, made the ABIA longlist for International Book of the Year, as well as the Women's Prize for Fiction longlist, the UK's most prestigious annual book award celebrating and honoring fiction by women. The book reads like a modern-day fairy tale. Protagonist Danny and his older sister Maeve are being raised by an emotionally absent divorced father who marries a woman named Andrea, who isn't quite an evil stepmother, but she's not far off. Through a series of tragic events, Maeve and Danny suddenly find themselves kicked out of the family home known as the Dutch House, with few possessions and no family except each other. The story follows the two siblings over the course of decades and through the circumstances of their lives continue as they continue to change. Maeve and Danny never stop obsessing over the Dutch House. Ann Patchett joined us when The Dutch House was published in September. Let's listen back to our conversation. I began by asking her if she knows what the ending of each chapter will be as she's writing it.
Oh, no. I definitely write to chapter. And I try to write the shape of a chapter. In this book, I was trying to write shorter chapters because I found that in my other books, my chapters were getting too long. And little chapters are so much more compelling. I did not make little chapters, but for me, these were more reasonable. But yeah, I always think of the chapter breaks as like the pedals on a piano. That's what really is controlling your tone and your volume and the excitement factor.
It was interesting in the New York Times, as I was reading different articles and reviews, you told the New York Times you worked on a draft of this in 2016 and then you threw it away.
Yeah, I did.
And you said it was like, this is funny, you said it was like Thelma and Louise going over a cliff. I made so many errors in judgment.
Yes.
What was wrong with the first draft?
Oh, man, if I told you that, I would ruin the book for people who were listening. But let's just say around page 12, I turned left when I should have turned right. I just got on the wrong interstate and I wrote an entire book in the wrong way. So when I rewrote it, it was the same set of circumstances, the same people, but on page 12, I turned in the opposite direction and the whole book took a different path. I put a book together in my head and usually I'm right. This has never happened to me before.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I got to the end and I thought it was fine. And I sat down to read it through for the first time and I was 10 pages from the end and I couldn't finish it. It was that bad.
What did that feel like for you?
You know, it was just sobering. I'm 55 and I thought, okay, well, it's good to know that at 55, I am still capable of writing so badly and learning and making a mistake this huge and picking myself up. But ultimately, what happened is my friends kept saying, oh, it must be like a death. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. It's nothing at all like a death. And then I thought, it's like burning a cake. You make a cake, you know, maybe it was a hard cake, whatever, you burn it. There's nothing you can do to fix it. You've burnt the cake. You just have to throw it out and start over again. And that's life.
What would have happened if this had happened to you 30 years ago?
I think it would have really shaken me. I think if it had happened to me 30 years ago, I would have left it in the trash can and just walked away. Whereas at this point in my life, I was invested in the characters. I really cared about them. I mean, I knew that I had done wrong by them. That was the thing. And I wanted to go back and do right by these people that I really loved. And my friends kept saying, well, what if you were wrong? You should have someone else read it. You might be wrong. I was not wrong. I read loads of bad books, and this was one of them.
I was going to say, as someone who owns a bookstore, Parnassus, you read a ton of books. You know when something isn't working.
I totally do. Yeah.
That's so interesting. My guest is Ann Patchett. We're talking about her new book, The Dutch House. So in this book, there are a lot of narratives which we recognize from fairy tales, the evil stepmother, there are stepsisters, absent mom. There's even, you just say, give Hansel and Gretel a shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
What did using these sort of recognizable structures offer you as a novelist?
You know, I have such a love of plot and story. I am very old-fashioned in that way. And it's fairy tales, but it's also Lives of the Saints. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I love Butler's Lives of the Saints. I like a story with a big narrative arc and a moral and a good and a bad and a beginning and a middle and an end. And it's not as if I'm trying to write a fairy tale. This isn't magical realism that, you know, it's, and lots of people have absent mothers and stepsiblings. And that doesn't mean that we're living in a fairy tale, but there are definitely archetypal points that I think to me really represent story. I mean, what you're saying, you read it in a day. And to me, that is the fairy tale quality of it. I am getting into this storyline and I've got to follow it until the end.
The evil stepmother, I'm very curious about her because somehow she's a younger woman, much younger than the man she marries. She's quite beautiful, we learn. And I didn't hate her.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like what she did, and I didn't like the way she treated her stepchildren. But I didn't fully just think of her as just an evil, witchy woman.
Good.
If you would talk to me a little bit about how you write a character like that, who clearly is the bad guy, but you still need me, the reader, to feel for her.
So if you read my entire body of work, you would know the thing that was missing were villains. I have no talent for villains, and it's because I like people, and I just can almost always see the other side of the story. I find compassion for just about everybody, but I want to write a villain. I mean, to me, Andrea is so much more a villain than anyone I've ever written. And I will tell you how I got to her, which was I was interviewing Zadie Smith when Swing Time came out. And we were talking about autobiographical fiction. And she was saying that something could be autobiographical, not because it had happened to you, but because it was the thing that you were afraid of, the thing that you obsessed about. Maybe it was something that you wanted to have happen, or that you were terrified you might do, even if you'd never done it and you never would do it. And I thought at that moment, sitting on a stage with Zadie Smith, I want to write a book about being a terrible stepmother, because I have two stepchildren, and I was not and these are not my stepchildren in the book, and I was not a terrible stepmother at all. But when they were young, and I've been with their father for 25 years, I was so afraid that I would fail them. I was so terrified of being an evil stepmother. And I could tap into that part of myself. Like Andrea is the person I'm afraid of being. And so it was easier for me to get to her villainy than it was for me to get to anybody else's villainy.
It's funny that I asked you how to pronounce it, because Andrea feels warmer than Andrea.
Yes, right.
And I wasn't quite sure which one it was. And
right,
I think
absolutely.
That's kind of interesting about that name, however you want to read it or hear it.
And also, I have so many friends who've come to me after they read the book and said, well, was this about me? Was this my family? Did you use this? And I have a friend whose okay stepmother turned bad towards the end when his dad died, and her name was Andrea. And she was so unnecessarily hurtful to the person I love so much. And I said, do you want me to name the stepmother after her? And he was like, oh, would you? So, yeah, there you go.
Oh, you're a good friend, too. My guest is Ann Patchett. The name of her new novel is The Dutch House. The house is a huge part of this story. You know, I don't want to be cliche and say it's a character in the story, but it's a catalyst for a lot. It's this grand house. Was it based on any home you'd ever seen?
No, and there are lots and lots of pieces of the Dutch house that I took from different houses that I've admired. But I do believe that we all have a house in our mind, either that we went up to a party there once or we drove past there when we were a kid and thought, oh, that is the most beautiful, that boy, if you lived in that house, everything would be perfect. So I didn't want to give too many details. I want the reader to be able to imagine the Dutch house she sees in her mind, and just kind of tap into that house love that I think we all have.
Would you read a passage about the Dutch house? I've got my book, and I think we want to start here. So people... Oh, I'm glad you brought your glasses in.
I did, but not the book. Okay, here we go. The Dutch house, as it came to be known in Elkins Park and Jenkintown and Glenside and all the way to Philadelphia, referred not to the house's architecture, but to its inhabitants. The Dutch house was the place where those Dutch people with the unpronounceable name lived. Seen from certain vantage points of distance, it appeared to float several inches above the hill it sat on. The panes of glass that surrounded the glass front doors were as big as storefront windows and held in place by wrought iron vines. The windows both took in the sun and reflected it back across the wide lawn. Maybe it was the neoclassical, though with a simplicity in the lines that came closer to Mediterranean or French. And while it was not Dutch, the blue Delft mantels in the drawing room, library, and master bedroom were said to have been pried out of a castle in Utrecht and sold to the Van Hobakes to pay a prince's gambling debts. The house, complete with mantels, had been finished in 1922.
The house, people have very strong reactions to the house. They love it, they're obsessed with it, or they hate it.
Right.
What is it about this house that makes people react that way?
I think that houses are the repository of our memories and our childhoods. It's where we leave our past in the house, what we lived in, even if you don't live there anymore. So it's the place where Danny and Maeve were happy, and it's the place that they feel was unfairly taken from them. And it's really, the house represents an obsession. It represents their childhood hurt and injustice that as they get older and have happy lives themselves, they cannot stop gnawing on the bones of their past. And that, I think, is something that happens to so many of us. Something bad happened in our childhood, and we will talk about it at parties, and we will bring it up to our therapists, and we will never let it go. And they make a fetish out of the house, the suffering.
The name of the book is The Dutch House, and my guest is Ann Patchett. We'll have more with Ann after a break. This is All of It. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and we're back with a conversation I had with Ann Patchett about her novel, The Dutch House. When we returned from the break, I asked Ann about the relationship between Danny and Maeve, who are brother and sister. They're the protagonists of the book. I asked her what she thought about reviews that asked if they were, quote-unquote, too close.
Okay, sure. That is the stuff fiction is made of, right? they're very close. So Maeve is 7 years older than Danny, and she is his sister and his friend, but she is also really his mother. She's the person who raises him and who looks after him and puts his need before her need always throughout their life. And also, they have a certain survivor bond. They went through this very hard thing together. So as they grow up and Danny gets married and they have relationships and families and all of these things, no one really understands what they went through except one another. It's sort of like if the house had been on fire and Danny and Maeve had run out and escaped the fire and then for the rest of their lives said, well, you couldn't possibly understand what that was like. It was a hugely bonding experience. So they have about 10 different reasons to be too close. And also they have this sort of wonderful bantering shorthand. They're very funny when they're together. And I love their closeness and their relationship. It was really fun to write.
Danny's wife does not like their closeness in a relationship.
No.
She's one of those people who would say they're too close.
Right, exactly. And Danny's wife is sort of like Cassandra. She's always saying the truth, and it's so annoying. You know, and she is saying, yeah, people grow up. People get over things. bad things happen, people get over them and move on. And you and your sister, she says at one point, my God, you're like Hansel and Gretel walking in the dark woods holding hands forever. Enough already. And of course, both Danny finds this annoying. Maeve finds it super annoying. But Danny's also set up this bad dynamic between his wife and his sister. Danny is the guy who takes no responsibility for the dynamics he has set in motion. And he's also fantastically oblivious to all of the service and care he receives, not only from his wife and his sister, but from his household staff and the women who raised him and were there for him.
The book is, if anyone hasn't read the book, they would think, oh, well, Maeve must be our narrator. But Danny is our narrator. Why Danny instead of Maeve? Since Maeve sort of is a bit of a, you know, she's kind of awesome. She's a hero
yeah,
in many ways.
Absolutely.
But it's Danny who we see the story.
Well, because it's better to look at Maeve than to look through Maeve's eyes, because Maeve would never tell you anything about herself. That's not who she is. Mm-hmm. So Danny is just watching her and loving her and getting things wrong. And Danny was such an easy voice for me to get into, again, because he is smart and he's charming and he moves through life easily and he's incredibly privileged, but so oblivious. And I have a certain amount of anger towards Danny because he just doesn't acknowledge. He just wouldn't believe that all these women are taking care of him. Mm-hmm. And I was able to channel some of that frustration I've had in my life at some point into this character. If it was Maeve seeing Danny, then we would be hard on Danny, which is not what I want. But I just kind of like him coming from this place of, like, a guy. He's just such a guy. Just doesn't really see all of the things that are going on around him. Excuse me, I don't mean to denigrate guys.
Well, as you're saying this, I'm wondering if from January 21st, 2016 on, if 17, excuse me, if there was something in the air.
Absolutely.
That made you think, like, I need to write about a guy like Danny.
This book, and let us just say, there is no connection between our president and our narrator, but a sense of entitlement. But I'll tell you, this book really did come out of that election in large part because of a celebration of wealth and the idea that there was nothing in the world better than being the richest guy out there. And I thought, I want to write a book about a character who doesn't want to be rich, who's given everything and finds it so repulsive that she walks away from it.
And that's the mom of these two.
And that's the mother. She is poor. She cares for the poor. She loves the poor. She is from a poor family. And when overnight she and her husband become excruciatingly wealthy, she is so repulsed by the circumstances of her life that she walks away from them.
It took me a while in the book to decide, and I don't know if I still have, I don't know if I've decided yet, whether or not the mother character had some sort of mental illness. Or did she just have a breakdown?
I don't.
And walking out on, and that's a big question, on walking out on her family to go to India.
I don't think it's mental illness, and I don't think it's a breakdown. I think it is a kind of altruism that isn't healthy and is, again, very embedded with the lives of the saints. And this notion of, Elna wouldn't say she wants to be a saint, but she wants to live the life of a saint. She wants to live a life of service to the poor without giving any thought to her responsibilities and to who she's leaving behind. You know, she says at one point, for her children, you guys were fine. You were totally taken care of. I had to go take care of people who didn't have anyone to take care of them. It's incredibly frustrating. And if you saw her from a distance, you would say she's a saint. If you saw her up close, you'd want to throttle her.
But the children emotionally were not taken care of.
No.
At all.
Oh, but you know, children often aren't taken care of emotionally even when their mom stays home. There you go. Somebody said to me, oh, but the father, he's so withholding. He's so cold emotionally. And I said, he's a 1950s father. We aren't sitting down at the dinner table to discuss our feelings.
Although he has a great passion for this house.
Yes, he does. He does. And he feels like, okay, I married one woman who didn't like the house. Now I found a woman who does like the house. That will solve all the problems. Because basically what he wants is to not have to think about anything that's going on in the house. He wants the house and the children to be taken care of and to run like the trains in Switzerland on time. And he wants to go outside of the house and build his career in real estate and development, which is what he loves. He loves buildings. He loves buying.
My guess is Ann Patchett, the name of her new novel, is The Dutch House. I'm going to ask one more question about the book, and then I want to ask you a little bit about your store and yeah. Banned Books Weeks, because we're in it. Maeve, out of the two siblings, Maeve seems the one that is the most obsessed with the house.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to go by and do drive-bys. We've done that if we've moved. You've got to just check in. I've peeked into the windows of apartments where I used to live.
Yeah.
What did they do in the living room?
Right.
But she...
That's kind of creepy.
I cop to it. She's more obsessed than her brother.
Yeah.
Why is she more attached? Is it because she's alone? Because
she is alone-ish.
Ish, yeah.
And she stays. She stays in the town. And Danny moves to New York, and he has a big, complicated life and mm-hmm. a career. And I think that if Maeve had moved to California and kind of gotten on with things, but for a host of reasons that are pretty hidden until the very end of the book, we don't really know why Maeve is staying so close by, but she does. And she, because of that, has a hard, hard time letting go of the past. It's hard to let go of the past if you keep standing in it.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk away from it, it's easier.
Let's leave it there because I don't want to give any more away.
Right.
Again, the name of the book is The Dutch House. So as the co-owner of Parnassus Bookstore in Nashville, yes.
Yes.
I've been. I just remember where it was. What are you seeing as a common theme in literature and in fiction in the past 2 years? I'm just fascinated about what people have been creating since the election.
A lot of dystopia. A lot of fear for the planet. A lot of just what's going to happen to us as a people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking also about books that are coming out, because of course everything I read is coming out in 6 months. There's just a lot of raising the alarm is what I'm seeing mm-hmm. in some new books that are coming out.
What are people coming in and asking for?
People want a book that will envelop them and sweep them up. They want a book that is smart and funny. And books that are smart and funny are hard to find. And that's always the big ticket. I always think of Where'd You Go, Bernadette?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just, it carries you away. You're going to laugh. You're going to get caught up in the story. People also love a big enveloping saga, Pachinko by Min Jin Lee. That's a book we could just sell all day long, because you're going to start that book, you get on a plane, you're going to fall into it, time will fall away. Yeah, I think that people want fiction that they can really get lost in.
That was my conversation with Ann Patchett. And as you heard during that conversation, Patchett is the co-owner of a well-known bookstore called Parnassus Books in Nashville. Of course, we're thinking of everyone affected by the devastating and deadly tornadoes in the Nashville area earlier this week. At least 24 people are dead and more than 50 missing in the area and outlying areas. Parnassus Bookstore was closed yesterday so staff could help friends and family. Today, Parnassus tweeted, "We are open today and grateful that we are able to be. Thank you to everyone who has checked in on us. Many others in Tennessee were not as fortunate as us. On their Twitter feed, Parnassus links to ways you can help with the recovery, and we have retweeted that link on our Twitter page, @AllOfItWNYC.